From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And this is Andy Stelland.
And welcome to Defrag Tools. So Andy is here with us from the IE team.
Yeah, we work on both the IE team and the Visual Studio team, building tools for HTML and JavaScript.
Awesome.
Normally like debugging and diagnostic tools
right.
to help people really understand what's going on in their web application.
Great. So for developing web apps and really just anybody who wants to kind of know
yeah,
more about
for developing apps
on
IE like this or for right. developing apps that are using WinJS and the HTML JavaScript store apps.
Great. Right. So we're going to talk about the F12 tools.
Yep, we certainly are.
Okay, let's do it.
Cool. So yeah, my name is Andy Stund and I work as a program manager on these tools. And today we're mostly going to be talking about some of the, how should we say, some of the tips and tricks for using these tools.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do the demos on the January tech preview of Win 10. So I'm going to show you some new features. So a bit of a mix of some new stuff that we've just added, as well as some helpful stuff that's available today, even in Windows 7 and IE11.
Great.
So to get started, the first thing I'm going to show is really something in the DOM Explorer that we just added. So many people, you know, if especially building new web apps, you know, you have the luxury of starting from scratch. You're writing CSS, but you might be using less than Sass, you know, something that compiles to CSS, because mm-hmm. CSS isn't the easiest language in the world to make sense of. Mm-hmm. So if you're using those sort of tools, it can be a bit weird coming into a tool like, you know, the DOM Explorer, which shows you what's going on, your CSS and things like that, and not to see a link back to your Sass. So if you look at this amazingly styled button right here.
I look amazing.
Yeah, it says in the tin. What you'll see is that there's now a link to your Sass style sheet. So over here, you can see in the debugger, we've got your Sass and whatnot. So this is great because rather than taking you to CSS, which you might not have seen, it takes you back to your file that you developed in, you know, Sublime or whatever editor you have to be using.
Right.
The nice thing about that as well is that you can also turn this feature off, and we also have another feature we've added to the DOM Explorer, to the debugger, sorry, that helps with pretty printing. So today we do pretty printing on JavaScript. So if I just zoom in a second, and you can see this little magic button here with the curly braces, that's pretty print. Yep, it's really helpful. If you've ever worked with minified JavaScript, you know, you've got a huge file, you've compressed it down to one line of code or something crazy, obviously completely debuggable. So pretty print helps with that. And previously in F12, it used to just work for JavaScript. So now we've expanded that a lot, and we can work with HTML and CSS. So here you've got this CSS file. It's all kind of jumbled and compressed. Just press pretty print, and it'll land on the right place. Makes it much more readable.
Nice. And that's a new Windows 10 developer preview?
Yeah, feature. This is a feature just in Windows 10 right now. So if you've got the January tech preview of it, you should be able to check it out.
Great.
And again, you know, this is just a start of a thing for us. We really want to make it so that if you're programming a language like less than Sass, that's reflected in the tools. So you don't have to have this extra mental jump to understand CSS and other things that you weren't directly using.
I see it even has a little box there next to the
colors. Yeah, some little broader cover previews, because I mean, who the hell knows what 25A, 25A is?
Well, I mean, I do, but I'm
clearly a very stylistic man.
I saw a car driving around one time in Seattle. It was a bright yellow Honda. And the vanity license plate said FFFF00. And I was like, oh, this person's a web developer.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I'm afraid my color palette is like 8 different colors.
Yeah.
So I don't even distinguish between these 2 different groups, which are really odd. But yeah, so another feature that is in the current IE11, so it's not just in January Tech Preview, but if you have IE11 on your Win7 box now or your Win8.1 box, something we've been working on for some time called Just My Code. So a big thing for developers, especially web developers, is use libraries. Like almost everyone uses jQuery or Angular or Ember or name your favorite JavaScript library.
Mm-hmm.
The downside of those things is they're pretty hard to debug.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it's someone else's code. And you don't want to be stepping through trying to understand, like most of the time, it's hard enough to understand your own code.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do is really understand someone else's.
Right.
So today, like, you know, before this feature, let me just turn this feature off so you can see like what a sort of experience you get. So I've got my jQuery window on ready here. And what I'm going to do, actually, let's do it through a button. That'll make it a bit easier for me, so we don't have to refresh the whole page. So now you're stopped at a breakpoint, just as you'd expect. You step. First thing, of course, you're going to step into jQuery, which is some code that's completely nonsensical to me.
Right.
Like, I can make it prettier, like by pretty printing, but that's still not going to help me. It's still going to be A, B, C. And even if it was nicely pretty printed and I used the debugger, which had the full text names, it's still confusing as a developer because this isn't my code. Fundamentally, if I'm going to fix a bug, it's not going to be in here. It's going to be in my own code.
Exactly.
So what I want to do is I'm just going to continue out of this. Normally what happens, of course, you step, you get so bored of stepping, you eventually end up stepping out of your own code and missing the bug you're debugging, which is a complete pain.
Happens to all of us.
Yeah, just in frustration, just like F10, F11, F9.
Right.
I keep hitting
and
those buttons.
Like, oh, I passed it.
Time to run it again.
Yeah.
So this time I'm going to turn the feature on, which is on by default. And what we need to do is, again, we'll hit the breakpoint just as you expect. But this time when we step, we'll step to the next line of R code. So we step through all that jQuery stuff that was setting the CSS and whatnot, because that's nothing we can debug here.
Right.
All we're doing is passing in a couple of string literals to set some styling. And now, of course, we've ended up our own code. And that's fantastic, because again, we're not stepped through all that jQuery stuff. You can see things that mark to the library code, like you might be asking, like, hey, wait, how did we know that was jQuery, that there was my library code? You know, it's a bit magical. So we've got a couple of things in F12 where we try to detect for you when you're using minified code. Mm-hmm. So the first clue, if you can look on the screen here, we have this like heuristic, basically, if things end in .min.js, you know, a lot of compilers have the convention of outputting that. And so we follow that, and if we see that, we just assume like, oh, great, that must be a library code, so we'll ignore that. And you can see this little Fruit Ninja button here.
Fruit Ninja.
It's like this person in code. It looks kind of like the Fruit Ninja game.
I got it.
And that indicates that it's library code.
Mm-hmm.
And so for any library, you can toggle it off and on. Because in your application, you're going to have many JS files, you have different naming conventions or whatever. We don't really know what's library code. You need to tell us. And so this is the first way you do that, is you can tag the files there. The other thing, if I step in to this next function, let me just close Magnifier for a second, and I step in, you'll see I'm in some other library code now in this geniusly named file, some other library.js. And so this library is saying some other team members worked on or something like that. And it's this fantastic function for getting a random number, which looks kind of gnarly. So I don't want to really debug this, because if it's a bug, he's going to have to go ahead and fix it. And so for him to fix it, for me to fix it, I'm first going to mark his library file as not my code.
Not yours.
So I don't end up stepping through it. So what I'm going to do is I can also go to that Fruit Ninja, but you can also do it here on the top. So I just mark library code.
Oh, okay.
And now when I step, it's just going to step me straight through that file.
So you can skip that.
Yep. So it's very easy. Like, you're at a breakpoint, you're in a file, and you're stepping. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you get to a file that isn't yours, you can just go to the top of the file, right click, and mark it as library code.
Nice.
So that's really handy. It also does, it also changes how like the call stacks work. You can see here that there's all this library code. So if I was to click on this, you'd probably find a bunch of jQuery code underneath here. Mm-hmm. You know, for all the jQuery's dispatch logic and stuff like that.
Right, which you don't really want to see.
Exactly. Right. So just my code is all about not just changing the stepping behavior in the call stacks, but it's also about changing the exception behavior. Another problem, like if you ever had this, is that sometimes when you're working on an application, say you've got like, you know, a classic way you see a bug is an exception. You've made a fat finger typo, normally you'd hit an exception. Say that your site's pretty fancy and you decide to catch exceptions and report them as like errors back to a server. So you've got something listening in the cloud or wherever that's saying like, oh, we have 3 million client errors today, someone better fix a bug.
Right.
Or something like that. That's great. The downside of those is those exceptions can be much more silent because they're caught and they're handled. And so they don't cause this big fat break. So the feature to get around that today is something called first chance exceptions.
Right.
So I think every developer hopefully should know the first chance exceptions. The idea is you break on the exception before it's caught. Like regardless if it's caught, regardless of what happens. The big downside of that is a lot of libraries, not naming any, use exceptions to detect features and stuff.
Right.
So you press refresh and all of a sudden you're breaking 7 times in your own code.
Exactly.
Which is a real pain. So with this feature, if I was to make sure first chance exceptions was on, and we had the drop down of break on all exceptions. Mm-hmm. So break on all exceptions is what will break you regardless if your exception is caught or not.
And that's the default?
The default is never break. Yeah, we changed the default actually to be never break. Mm-hmm. Since a lot of websites use like ads and libraries that throw exceptions even at global.
Right, so you just hit them up constantly.
Yeah, we're hoping that over time, like you'll be able to mark library code like you can do, you know, eventually you can mark doubleclick.net or whatever particular ad company that might be throwing errors as library code, and then essentially you can start to ignore that code because you're probably not going to fix it.
Right.
So for now, if you turn this on, hit this button, which is just going to throw an exception because I've called something that's not defined, it's going to break in that code. But at the same time, if I hit refresh or if I, you know, loading a library and stuff like that, I'm not going to break in the library code. Because if ever a library throws an exception, it's not going to count towards it. It's only for my code, my exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really helpful diagnostic tool when you want to turn on first chance exceptions, but not at the same time suffer all the noise of like listening to any number of components in your system that might be throwing exceptions for normal reasons.
Very cool.
So yeah, so that covers just my code. So it's a feature right now in the debugger, and it's out in IE11. We're looking at also taking it to other scenarios, like for profiling and stuff, trying to make sure that developers can stay in the their code where they can be effective. And so the real powerful thing for this feature is to make sure that when you're developing your application, that you mark these files as library code or not. And then basically you're saying, like, ignore this.
Right.
And that's persisted for the lifetime of the machine.
Oh.
So, well, the user account. If you don't delete your user account, you're fine.
And does that roam if you have like
a live
profile?
Right now it's just in like local, low, and local. It doesn't roam. It's actually something we're thinking about doing, just by putting in the roaming profile. Mm-hmm. There's actually a file on disk as well. So if you want, you probably read the instruction online, but it's all saved in a JSON file. Mm-hmm. So in theory, you can go ahead and edit that file yourself if you don't want to use the UI. The nice little trick, if you do edit the file, which is mycode.json, and it's in the IE local folder, is that you can add a wildcard character, so you can use an asterisk, and you can say star.foo or whatever. And so you can, rather than marking individual files, you can just say star.advertnetwork or whatever, and everything from that domain will be ignored, which is
very cool.
Awesome, because a lot of times it's pretty annoying just to go like this file, this file, this file, mm-hmm. especially if you have like a dynamically generated third party.
Very cool.
So yeah, that was a quick intro to the Just My Code feature.
Nice.
So the next thing I'm going to take a quick look at is something we call trace points.
Mm-hmm.
So if you use Visual Studio, you're probably familiar with these from managed languages and C++. And the basic idea of a trace point is to, rather than like hitting a breakpoint and stopping in the debugger where you can inspect and call stacks, it's just to log a message to the console. So almost every developer would have had a similar experience with this, but using console.log. So today, like if I want to instrument a function, mm-hmm. I would typically go to my editor, console.log, and log whatever string, whatever message I wanted to do. And then I'd build and redeploy my application. The downside to that, of course, it means you have to build and redeploy your application. Mm-hmm. So say you've got a bug that only repos in production, so you can't really just like dynamically push to it.
Mm-hmm.
Or say your build time, it's a bit of a pain to add this little bit of instrumentation because you're right there and you don't want to stop your workflow. So we added a feature called console log, which is basically, if we just open up the file, so we're going to get to the trace points. In fact, I can quickly use another feature. So one handy other thing, if you ever want to get to a handler for a button, if you're ever like, hey, I've got this button, mm-hmm. but I don't know where the click handler is, mm-hmm. if you inspect that element and go to the DOM Explorer in the events tab, you can see here it lists out where the event handler is. So you can just jump to it.
Click right on that.
Yeah, because sometimes it can be tricky going from the HTML you have to your JavaScript.
Mm-hmm.
So here we've got this random number generator, which is great.
It's prime.
Yeah, got this fantastic function. It's really useful code to calculate the prime number. But you can imagine you're building your application, and perhaps your application, your best selling application, isn't going to calculate prime numbers for someone.
Well, yeah.
Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe even on the store app,
encryption
it's pretty to do
or something. Yeah. Okay.
A seed for your random email.
Yeah.
For the extra paranoid. So here you go. So let me just show you that again. Sorry. So what we're going to do is, it's just like a breakpoint. You can add it from the right-click context menu. You can go insert trace point. And then you're prompted with this message, like, hey, like, what do you want to log? Because the thing here is we're not going to break in the debugger. We're instead going to log a message. So I can do something really dappy, like just say hi, which is not going to be particularly useful, but it'll illustrate the point right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I press the button and I get hi. Great.
Yeah.
Not that useful, but it can be handy.
Could be.
So, but the other thing here, of course, is we get access to all the variables. So mm-hmm. it's not just like a string.
That's where it gets used.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So here you can imagine I've got this variable called random number. So I can do this, add a bit of spacing. And so this is really like console.log. You can imagine everything that would go in the parentheses for console.log mm-hmm. is essentially inside here. So hi, and now when I press the button, and you get the number.
You get the number.
Which is also, so now you can log variables, you can concat strings, so you can do exactly what you do from console.log.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great. You can even do stuff like log entire objects, because a random number was just an integer, so we didn't want to do that. Just a number, right? We're just going to display it. But you could be cheeky and just say, let's just log window. And that's going to output an inspectable object, which you can go ahead and inspect.
Oh.
So if I had like an object here, like right now it's a number, so there's not much to look at.
Mm-hmm.
But you can log an object, you can inspect it just like you would a console.log. The other nice thing about trace points is we also added them for events. So sometimes it's handy, obviously, if you have a code location. You've got like a piece of code. Rather than breaking, you're swapping it out for that. But you can also do it for events, so like a click. So here we've got this button press, and I'm going to log a message. But this time, actually, I'm going to log the argument. So the tricky thing about events is that when this trace point gets called, we don't know what the name of the event is. So like typically, you'd have like click handler, add event list handler, click function, and an E, or whatever the name of your event arg you want to call.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, your code hasn't ran, so that E hasn't been set. So instead, you can use an awesome trick in JavaScript called arguments, which is the array of all the parameters passed into the arguments, passed into the function. This is a bit of backdoor magic, but if you press this button, what you'll get is you'll get all the events that fired. So on the window, obviously we just logged the window event as well, mm-hmm. but you can see this pointer event. So the pointer event is the from the click. So you can just easily capture any of the events that happen in the system and log them to the console without having to, you know, break. Again, so if you're using something like resize or move or something that's very chatty, mm-hmm. clearly debugging it by, you know, setting a breakpoint is too much of a pain. Like every time you resize and you get a breakpoint, it'd be a bit of a pain. Mm-hmm. So you can use events like that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The nice thing about them, since they're breakpoints, is you can just manage them like breakpoints, that you can disable them and individually enable them. So unlike like console instrumentation, like if I instrumented my code, I added console.log, I'm gonna have to go away and remove that. And there's no end of websites that ship without having that removed. Right. Which normally isn't a big problem, but for some older browsers, unfortunately, it can create exceptions. Because in some older browsers, like IE8, for example, console.log and stuff aren't defined. Mm. So no end of people, you know, they ship their code, it works fine in their DevTools, because console.log is going to work great when the DevTools are open. Mm-hmm. But you ship it to production, your customer's probably not got the DevTools open.
Right.
And so, bang, they hit an unexpected exception and your app falls over.
Right.
So really good hand thing, because this can't happen. You know, it's just breakpoints, you can just manage them, they're to your application.
Very cool.
So we can also go ahead and remove them, do whatever.
I love that this can all just be done on production code without having to go out and do that.
You know? Exactly. So it's really handy in environments where you can't just add a console.log. Because that's the, you know, that can be an easy solution in many cases, like if you're just working off local disk. Mm-hmm. But sometimes that can be a bit nuanced. Mm-hmm. So yeah, and that's really what we did trace points for. So the next real quick feature is something that was new in Windows 10, so just the January tech preview. So again, we tried to do a lot of stuff to make the experience when you're using something like TypeScript much better, or these compiled languages. One of the really nice things about a language like TypeScript is it's statically safe, statically typed. So for example, you have an object, you know where it's defined, and you know its, you know, type essentially. Where in JavaScript it's a bit hit and miss. You know, JavaScript's a very duck-typed, very loosey-goosey, weakly typed language. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing about that, it gives you some very powerful tools. So if I go to look at this TracePoints code, so the trace points thing here, go to this new source nav stuff. We're using a ray tracer just to make it like a little 3D image using WebGL for no particular reason.
Takes me back to my days in the 90s.
Yeah, seriously. It's like, hey, WebGL, the new shiny stuff. Except they have got it working with like the Unreal Engine at the moment, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
So this is a simple little vector drawing thing. But the nice thing about it, the reason we're using it, is it has a ton of like classes and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it's got some real object graph and stuff like that. Something you can't really do in JavaScript, or at least not easily. And so the two features we added was one was find references. So if you're from Visual Studio, you know that's where everyone, so you're on a function or you're on an object and you want to see who's calling you. So you're debugging your application, you're like, hey, who makes use of that? That's exactly what find references is for. And the other one, go to definition, tells you where you're defined. So for example, if I was to find references, like you just right click again, there's like a little like a menu here. Mm-hmm. And what you see pop up is a list of all the places where someone used the vector, which in this app is quite a lot. Unsurprisingly. And just like you'd expect, you can click through and browse all these places. Mm-hmm. So the idea here, of course, is that this really helps you understand how your application is being used. So when you're at a breakpoint or debugging it, you can say like, oh, okay, who's calling me? The other nice thing that can be really helpful is if you find a particular property or object, you can also do like go to definition. So you can see where it's defined. So here, obviously, I clicked on a type, so it took me to the constructor of that type. So that's really useful when you're, you've got a variable and you're wondering, well, where did this get set to X? You can go to definition, you can find the first place and trace it back through. So there's some really powerful source navigation features, because one of the challenges with writing big applications using TypeScript is that they're big. Right, there's a lot of code, and many people worked on them, so it might not always make sense. It's very hard to keep this whole mental model in your brain. Mm-hmm. So features like find reference, go to definition can make that much faster, much easier for you.
Very cool.
And the next thing, also added in Windows 10 in the January tech preview, is some better ways of setting and viewing breakpoints. Like, we added some small ones. So right here, we've got this little button for adding an XHR breakpoint. And so what this says is that whenever there's a web request, like an XHR, an XML HTTP request, that's gone to a server, like say you've used it to get some research results or something like that, break on the code that's handling it. Because it's really typical, you've got your application, you've got this fancy little search box, and you're typing, and something didn't happen. There's no results or something like that. And so now you have to go and set code, you know, breakpoints and stuff. So with that set, and we can press this little button here that's going to fetch some data. And a couple of things you'll notice. So obviously we've broken in the handler, So here we've got this on. Just for illustration purposes, I've just used a basic XHR. We're in the ready state change, and you can see this is the code that we're handling the response. Another nice thing is that here you've got this async call stack. So a big feature we've had in the DevTools for a while, so this isn't new for Tech Preview, is async call stacks. And so what they do is you can imagine your application as a series of events. Mm-hmm. So a user presses a button, that sends an XHR request, that comes back. Most of those events are going to be asynchronous in nature. Like, you don't want to block on a network request and stuff like that.
Right.
And so what we try to do is try to take not just the current stack that's executing, like when the response comes back, but also try to tie it back to what caused that response.
Right.
So like in a causality example, like say this one here, you've got this onClick handler. So if I just unzoom for a second, so I just click this and it navigates to where the request was actually sent, the xhr.send at the bottom. So that's really handy. Imagine you've got a more complicated application than 16 lines of code.
Yeah.
Well, I guess 19. These can be disparate. Like, they could even technically be in separate files. Hopefully not.
Yeah.
But they can be far apart and hard to tie together.
Yeah.
And so this really allows you to go between, like, not just where you are, but what caused you, like a causality.
Yeah.
And in the future, we're adding it so you can go back to your event listener. Because right now, this chain didn't just end here. There was one thing that happened before where I wired up the click handler. Mm-hmm. Because someone at some point in the past wired up a click handler that started this particular train of events. Mm-hmm. So we'll be adding more instrumentation for more ad event listeners. Mm-hmm. So basically, you'll be able to see like everything from like, hey, this is the button when the button was created. This is when the event handler was added to it. Mm-hmm. This is when you clicked via request, and the request was sent to the server. And now you're at your response where the data's coming back.
Right.
So that's a really powerful feature for helping you understand the logical stack of your application and not just the current frame.
Not just the call stack, but the actual sort of
chain of causality that ends you to this terrible place.
Yes.
Yeah. And that becomes really powerful, especially if you're using, more and more people using more and more asynchronous code, and they're using wrappers to, be it promises or defers and stuff like that, that try to abstract some of the asynchronous, which is still there.
Right.
So that's a very simple example of async instrumentation. So the last thing I was going to very briefly mention, because it's not strictly debugging, but I started on something that wasn't debugging with the DOM Explorer, so I finished on something that wasn't the debugger. But this is a really powerful thing that perhaps not many people have heard of. If you press Control-Shift-U in any version of IE since 11, you can see this little, heads-up display. And what it does is it tells you how the current performance of this page is doing in terms of time to paint an individual frame on average, the frame rate you're making, and how much memory and CPU you're using. So if you just browse around here, you can see that my frame rate drops to 20 frames and whatnot. So this is really interesting, because a big problem whenever you come to profile your site is you might not be aware of a problem.
Right.
Like, unless it's really gratuitous, on your beefy dev box, you're probably not going to notice much of a drop.
Right.
But of course, someone comes to use it on a phone or a tablet or another device, that drop is going to be monumental to them and it can result in janking. So you can just keep this up as you're browsing and using your website or as you're debugging even, to keep it in the back of your mind, like, hey, how is the performance doing?
Control-Shift-U, good.
Exactly, really simple shortcut. So rather than just, is it looking slow? No, it looks fine, okay. You can actually get a much more scientific measure of how it's doing. And if you spot a problem, that's where all our perf tools are handy and stuff, and I'm sure we'll talk about that another day.
That's awesome.
And
There is a little graph as well.
So you can click on individual ones.
Histogram.
And see a little histogram of the last few seconds.
Very cool. So you see it. Top is 60 and
yeah,
all right,
yeah,
very cool.
So yeah, that pretty much covers some of the topics I want to talk about.
Right on.
Showing you some of the new stuff we've added and some of the old classic stuff in F12 that you can use today in IE11.
That's great. I learned some stuff. I mean, I'm coming from more of an OS perspective, so I didn't even know about Control Shift U. Very cool. Good to know. All right. Well, so that's it for this week.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching. Andrew is out sick today. Sorry, I didn't mention that earlier. Hope you feel better, Andrew. Hopefully he'll be back next week. And we got some more F12 stuff coming up, I think, next week. Some more tips and tricks on IE F12 tools.
Yeah, I'm going to be using the console, I think, next week.
Console. Very cool. All right. Well, thanks for watching. As always, if you have questions or comments, put them in the show notes down there or email us at defragtools@microsoft.com. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for watching.